Football Weekly is on the air.
Third and five from the Lions' eight. Debo out of the gun, takes, back, pressure comes, hit as he throws, picked off by the Lions, coming back the other way. Left sideline for Detroit, there's Houston, he's gone, Houston, 40, 30, 20, 10, 5, dancing into the end zone, pick six, touchdown Detroit Lions.
Here comes a right-footed punt, wobbly kick, and Brandon Tate starts from the 43-yard line. Tate looking for the room
for the 50, and he's down the sideline to the 40, the 30, the 25, the 20, breaks the tackle. Brandon Tate takes it to the house.
This is Wayne Larravee with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. Welcome to an in-depth look at professional football. Coming up, rivalry renewed in Pittsburgh and the Giants and Pats in Foxborough.
Is it rebuilding time in Indianapolis? What's up with the Chargers' offensive line, and are the Vikings headed west?
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Along with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish, this is Wayne Larravee. The Way We Hear It features news and information gathered by the editors and reporters of Pro Football Weekly. We begin this week with Associate Editor Arthur Arkish. Lots of news in Indianapolis, Arthur. This is kind of strange. They IR Kerry Collins instead of Peyton Manning. What gives there?
Yeah, it's not every day you hear of a player being held off injured reserve just in the hopes that he's going to be able to return to practice, but that's exactly what we're hearing in Indianapolis right now. Vice Chairman Bill Polian said on his radio show Monday night that they want to see where Manning is at. They want to get him back out on the practice field with his teammates to kind of get an idea of where his arm strength is at and where he's at in all, because it's been obviously since last January since he's played with his teammates. So while they've admitted that, while Polian's admitted that with that offensive line, there's not a very good chance, and obviously with the Colts being 0-8 and going nowhere fast, there's no real reason to bring Manning back in live game action, but they do want to get him on the practice field and see where he's at before the season ends, because they have an opt-out in his contract next March where they can avoid paying him that roughly $25 million if they're not comfortable with his rehab.
You know, part two of the story, Arthur, and it's pretty obvious what they have to do there, and speculation would be silly. They want to see where Manning's at, if he's even 80-90%. You've got to believe they're going to pay him the $25 million because they know the uproar that will occur if they let him go. But also, I'm looking at your notes. You're hearing reports that Reggie Wayne is telling folks around him that he thinks that he could be done in Indy after this year?
Well, that's correct. Both Reggie Wayne and Robert Mathis are in the final year of their contracts, and it'll be interesting to see if these guys get a mulligan for the performance on the field without Manning, but obviously Reggie Wayne hasn't been getting it done. Pierre Garçon's been the guy there, and Wayne's been a little bit unhappy. Now, you'll remember he was going to be a holdout last offseason, so this has been going on for a while, but he has been telling some folks in the media that he doesn't think he's going to be back. Now, if Manning is in fact back, we hear he's going to make a strong push to have his number one wideout re-sign him back with the club, but that's what we're hearing at this point. He's not confident about his future in Indy.
Arthur, thank you very much. Associate Editor Dan Parr is with us. Down in New Orleans, they're wondering about that defense. Will it be good enough by the second half of the season to make a Super Bowl push? Defensive end Will Smith's production has been down, and is he blaming the scheme, Dan?
Well, Wayne, he was careful about what he said. He said the scheme has helped them win a lot of games. They won a Super Bowl with it during the 2009 season. Smith had a career high in sacks that year, but since then he has 10. In the last 20 games he's played, so the production hasn't been where we saw in the past. And speaking to him, he does feel like the opportunities just aren't there right now. Greg Williams mixes things up a lot. Defensive ends aren't just pinning their ears back and going after the quarterback. And I think he feels that, you know, if he's in a different scheme, his numbers might look a little differently right now.
So do you get a sense, Dan, that Smith is defending himself, which would be understandable? It's not necessarily selling out his teammates. Or is he subtly suggesting to Greg Williams that maybe you're not putting us in the best position to be productive and win?
I didn't get that from him, Hub. I think he knows that this defense was great. I mean, they forced more turnovers, I think, than just about anybody in that 2009 season. And since then, hasn't quite been the same. The numbers were better last year against the run, against the pass, but they didn't get those takeaways. This defense is a lot very different from a lot of the other ones you see in the league, and I think Smith kind of is conflicted a little bit. He obviously would like to see his numbers better, but he knows that Greg Williams isn't going anywhere. This team is still a good one despite their struggles this year, and he just wants to make it clear that there's an explanation for why you may not see those numbers where you've seen them in the past from Smith.
We're visiting with Associate Editor Dan Parr. Dan, another one of your teams, the Chicago Bears. The story mushrooming out of Chicago is concerning the contract situation for Matt Forte. There was talk this past week that the Bears had decided they were just going to franchise him next year. What can you tell us? What's the latest on this guy? Because this running back accounts for 46% of this team's offense.
Yeah, the latest is there hasn't been much change in the talks between GM Jerry Angelo and Forte's agent Adisa Bakari. There's been some suggesting in recent days that, you know, Forte's best strategy at this point, or one that he could consider, is walking out on the team and leaving them without him for the second half of the season. But that's my understanding, is that's not something that has really ever been considered by Forte or his camp, and really unlikely, completely out of character for Matt Forte. Whether you think he's worth a new contract or not, whether you think he deserves it or not, he's a professional, and he wouldn't leave his teammates out in the lurch like that.
Well, and you would think or hope that nobody in the NFL would. But what's really interesting about this story, and it's overdone to death in Chicago where we're based, Dan, but nationally, I'm not sure people really have a full appreciation for this. Matt Forte, 46% of the Bears' offense, leads the National Football League in total yards from scrimmage. And going into training camp on August 1st, Jerry Angelo said his main priority in training camp, or at least one of his main priorities, was to get a new contract done for Matt Forte. Now, a lot of people believe that the Bears have never made him a reasonable offer. You've got people like Adam Schefter, who I like and respect a lot, reporting they've decided to franchise him. That's not accurate. They haven't decided anything. They still hope to do a deal, but clearly they will franchise him if they don't get a deal done. They have that option, and it appears that the Bears are taking a dangerously hard stance with their most productive and one of their most popular veterans, with other veterans who are already unhappy in the locker room.
Yeah, that's building. There's been tension for a while between the front office and players in the locker room, and when you see Forte play the way he does, when he's taking that risk every week and going out there, it does have an effect on younger players who someday will be in his situation, on veteran players who are, you know, dissatisfied with the situation they have and feel that they've been wronged in some way. It's just, you know, a dangerous, delicate situation in Chicago right now. And if things go well in the second half for the team, they win games and are competing for a playoff spot, I don't think you're going to hear a whole lot about people being unhappy. It'll be kind of under the radar, so to speak. But if things do start to decline, if they don't get off to a good start in the second half, this could blow up and become a really interesting situation, even more than it is already.
Dan Parr on the Chicago Bears and Matt Forte. Back with more Way We Hear It when Pro Football Weekly continues. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly, featuring the publisher and editor, Hub Arkush, and the Pro Football Weekly staff. We continue with The Way We Hear It with Associate Editor Eli Caberon. And Eli, boy, we were just remarking during the break that what a way to lose a ball game, the way the Chargers went down in Kansas City. And a lot of people are focusing on Phillip Rivers and what's not going well there. But they have problems on that offensive line, certainly due to injury now with Chris Dielman down due to that concussion situation. And also with Marcus McNeil not playing to his level on the left side at the left tackle position. Talk a little bit about that offensive line. Is that one of the main problems there?
Yeah, that's a huge issue for them, Wayne, because Marcus McNeil is supposed to be the top player on that line with Chris Dielman, and he just was horrible against the Chiefs on Monday night. He had four false starts, a holding penalty, allowed two sacks. So they're considering some lineup changes. Tyrone Green did okay filling in for Dielman, and he might stay in the lineup even when Chris comes back. They have Brandon Dombrowski, who started 13 games for them over the past 2 years. He might get flowed into the lineup. They just have to do something because nothing's working up front for San Diego.
You know, you look at the way they lost that game Monday night. You look at the way they've played in their last, well, the way they've played all season, really. And we talked a little bit about this a couple weeks ago, Eli. I think what people are missing is that this is not the same 53-man deep, overloaded, talented roster with the Chargers that has underperformed the last few years. Like you say, on the offensive line, this is a team with a few issues, and the automatic bounce back that everybody's looking for here may not be with this team with some of the weaknesses, especially on defense.
Yeah, definitely. They're losing some players quickly, like Sean Phillips. He went out, and their backups are just inexperienced players that aren't really fit for their system. So after some injuries, they really have some depth concerns, and that's what's really bothering Norv Turner right now.
Eli, their big concern this week has to be in that secondary, though. Antoine Kayson, number one draft choice, has played poorly, was benched last week. Marcus Gilchrist, the rookie, the Chiefs picked on him. What are they going to do with Aaron Rodgers and his core receivers?
They're going to try to load up that secondary and try to slow down those receivers. Eric Weddle, their free safety, has played well, but he's about the only one that can say that in the secondary right now. Antoine Kaysan just got abused by Plaxico Burress a few weeks ago. He'll probably be in the nickel position trying to stop those big Packer wideouts. So it's going to be interesting to see if San Diego can do anything to slow down Aaron Rodgers.
All right, thank you very much, Eli. Senior editor Eric Edholm is with us. Dallas Cowboys always have news there. Some bad news on Sean Lee. Tell us about it, Eric.
Yeah, Sean Lee, who's been their second-best linebacker behind DeMarcus Ware, he's had an outstanding season, one bad game on Sunday night, suffered an injury in that game, and it sounds like with that dislocated wrist, he could be out for a significant amount of time. Now, we know he's probably going to miss this game. There's some varying reports on whether he should elect to have surgery or not. It sounds like Lee has not made up his mind yet.
Well, and here's the intriguing thing about this, Eric. I was on the sidelines for Westwood One 2 years ago in the opener in Green Bay when Brian Urlacher dislocated his wrist at halftime. Had surgery at 6 o'clock the next morning, and they said had he not had surgery within 24 hours, might never have been regained full use of that hand. Now, I'm not comparing the two. I realize there could be differences, but there's got to be some similarities. And the possibility of just playing through it for what? With a sub-500 team that makes strange roster decisions, like what they did this week, cutting Tashard Choice to keep Bruce Carter and carrying two kickers. And you really have to wonder what's driving this decision with Sean Lee. And we know how valuable he is. He's their leading tackler. He's got more tackles than their second and third tacklers combined. But still, he's a second-year player with a good future in front of him.
Yeah, it's a real tricky balance here, Hub, because they've got what amounts to a soft schedule coming up, and the NFC East is very much up for grabs. I think they have a great chance to at least stay in contention with teams like the Giants and Eagles. So they'd love to have Sean Lee out in the field, but if they think at all that there's any kind of chance for long-term hurt on this wrist, they're going to put him under the knife and shut him down for the year.
Now, you know, it's all but official. The Vikings franchise will be free agents later this winter. Tell us about that story in Minneapolis. Are they beelining for Los Angeles now, or what's the story there, this political twist?
Yeah, I think there's some bargaining and positioning going on here between the two sides. You know, the governor of Minnesota, Mark Dayton, canceled plans for a special session that would have happened right before Thanksgiving. It basically doesn't assume that anyone's leaving anywhere. I mean, basically what we're looking at is a situation where the Vikings are positioning themselves to negotiate with other situations, including Los Angeles possibly. We know the Metrodome lease runs out after next year, but I wouldn't start writing your plans to move out to L.A. yet. I don't think there's going to be any shuffling of the NFC North, anything like that. This is still very much up in the air, and I think there is some political bargaining and positioning being done here.
Well, Wayne, here's the thing. You know, the Will family doesn't really want to leave Minnesota, but what is intriguing is when you say free agents, that's it. I mean, they've got nothing binding them, and starting next spring, they can certainly talk to Los Angeles. They can be the team, and that gives them tremendous leverage, both with the league, with the city of Los Angeles, and with the state of Minnesota.
No question about it. All right. Thank you very much, Eric. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week. Stay tuned. We've got the games for Week 9 coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrabee along with Hub Arkush. In the NFL this weekend, there's an old saying in pro football. You're either getting better or you're getting worse. You're never staying the same. After a 2-1 start, the Cowboys have lost 3 of their last 4. The Seahawks are struggling overall through a 2-5 start this season. And quarterback Tavares Jackson returned last week, coming off the bench, passing for a career-high 323 yards in less than 3 quarters of action in the 34-12 loss to the Bengals. Neither one of these teams are pointing in an upward direction. The Cowboys didn't show up in Philadelphia last week, and with another loss could fall out of the playoff race in the NFC East. Tony Romo's been up and down this season, but the Seahawks are down to their third and fourth string cornerbacks. Seahawks ranked 19th against the pass, while the Cowboys are 6th in throwing the football. Blitzing, an option, but with that comes mostly man-to-man coverage in the secondary, and against the likes of Dez Bryant, Miles Austin, and Jason Witten, you just don't know how many chances the Seahawks want to take in this game. Meanwhile, the winless Miami Dolphins head to Kansas City, where the resurgent 4-3 Chiefs are coming off a 23-20 overtime victory over the San Diego Chargers last Monday night. Now, the Dolphins nearly got off the schneid, leading by 7 in the fourth quarter in the Meadowlands, but they were unable to hold on in losing to the Giants. And the Chiefs lost their first 3 games of the season, and I got to tell you, folks, didn't look good doing it.
Since then, they've knocked off Minnesota, Indianapolis, Oakland, and the San Diego Chargers. Tom Bahali, one of the top pass rushers in the business, someone the Dolphins have to be aware of and have a plan for. The Chiefs cover in the secondary. It was just outstanding against the Chargers. Can they do it 2 weeks in a row? Well, one would figure they can. They've got some confidence going out there, led by Brandon Flowers. As is so often the case, turnovers have told the story of the Dolphins this season. They have not won the turnover battle in any of the seven games they've played and lost in this campaign, Hub.
Wayne, we've got the Cleveland Browns visiting the Houston Texans this weekend. And, you know, you would have thought with Cleveland the question was all going to be about the quarterback situation. Colt McCoy been okay, hasn't been great. The passing game hasn't been tremendous, but it's the running game that has caused so much trouble. Peyton Hillis still struggling with the hamstring. Now Montario Hardesty with a calf injury is likely out this weekend. You got Brandon Jackson, who they got from the Packers, who went on IR before he ever played a game with turf toe. So they're down to basically nobody at running back. It'll be Obanaya, you know, starting for him this weekend if Hillis can't go. Thomas Clayton will be the backup. These guys, a lot of people don't know who they are, and yet that's the running game in Cleveland. You add to that that they haven't been taking care of the football very well, and they've got a tough trip to Houston. Now, for the Houston Texans, injury is pretty much the story. They lost their fourth significant defensive player in the last 3 weeks with a season-ending injury to Daryl Sharpton last week. He was rotating about every third series with D'Amico Ryans. Now, Ryans, who's had Achilles problems and elbow problems, he's the starter. He's the Pro Bowler. He says he's 100% now, and the Texans are really hoping he is, because if he's not, they're just too thin at this point with guys like Mario Williams gone. And so it's all going to be about how healthy these two teams can be to see whether this is a close one or not. Also, San Francisco visiting Washington, and the 49ers red hot, the Washington Redskins in a tailspin. They got shut out last week. It's not getting any better. It appears John Beck's certainly not the answer at quarterback, and the San Francisco 49ers have been terrorizing quarterbacks all year long. Defensively, Niners are sixth versus the run. They're sixth in points allowed. And most impressively, they are second in the league in turnover takeaway. The Redskins, 27th. Washington cannot afford a mistake here. And you look at a couple trends with the 49ers. Wayne, they averaged just 226 yards a game of offense in their first three games and managed to go 2-1. They're averaging 381 yards a game their last four. And how about Frank Gore? At least 125 rushing yards and a touchdown in four straight games. You got Frisco going coast to coast. That's always tough west to east, but everything else in this game seems to point towards the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, they have some talent on that 49er team. There's no doubt. And a lot of high draft choices on that defense. So I don't think the 49ers, this is not a mirage. They're a pretty good football team. And right now, they're well coordinated and coached by Jim Harbaugh. You know, it used to be the Colts would get to the midpoint of the season, Hub, without a loss. Well, this year, they don't have a win. Coming to town to the Atlanta Falcons, who have stumbled into a 4-3 start but are coming off a bye week and remain in the thick of the race of the NFC South Division. The Falcons have many advantages in this matchup, but foremost is on the ground, where Michael the Burner Turner is ready to run against the second-worst run defense in the NFL. Now, Turner is just the type of power back the undersized Colts front struggles against week in and week out. One curious note from the strange season the Falcons are having: they've been outscored 163-158 and are being outgained by 29 yards per game, yet they have a winning record, huh?
Wayne, Denver at Oakland is certainly an interesting football game for a number of reasons. I don't mean to laugh, but obviously the Tebow situation is out of hand. He played as badly as anybody can play last week, and yet now the Broncos are locked in. You can't give him two starts and say that's it. There's no real reason to expect things are going to get better in the short term, but he goes this week, and they better get better, or the reverse pressure from the anti-Tebow camp is going to start to mount quickly. This is a team that right now is 26th in offense, 29th in passing, 23rd in points scored. And they get an Oakland team that has a little bit of transition. You got Carson Palmer with the bye week now ready to get to go at quarterback. They've added T.J. Houshmandzadeh this week, and he may even play this Sunday. And the Raiders are tied atop the AFC West. So in Oakland, with the defense going, if nothing else, and a special game plan for Tebow, who got bombed by the Lions 42-10 last week, this is a tough putt, to say the least, for the young man at quarterback for the Broncos.
Well, Hub, I've got a matchup of 1-6 teams who won their first games at opposite ends of the spectrum. The Arizona Cardinals on week one over the Carolina Panthers, while the St. Louis Rams got into the win column just last week at the expense of the New Orleans Saints. The Rams broke through with their first victory, 31-21 verdict over the Saints. This week they travel to Arizona, where the Cardinals are trying to snap a six-game losing streak. One figures who's going to show up. Bradford could be back at quarterback, and that certainly will help the cause for the Rams, although A.J. Feely played well last week. Cardinals, meanwhile, blew a 24-3 lead at Baltimore in falling to the Ravens 30-27. Steven Jackson to the Rams, one of the top five running backs in the league for my money, and he's had the hot hand of late, averaging 5.3 yards per carry, scoring three touchdowns in the last three games. Cardinals managed just 207 total yards of offense, converted only 2 of 11 third downs, but still had that fourth quarter lead at Baltimore. Now, 6 is the magic number in the pass rush. The Cardinals offensive line allowed 6 sacks of Kevin Cobb, while the Rams got to Saints quarterback Drew Brees 6 times last week. Stay tuned. The big games are coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. This is Wayne Larrivee with Hub Arkish. Some of the top games on this weekend's NFL card. Hub, the Cincinnati Bengals defense appears to be for real. Fourth overall, second against the run, and this week the 5-2 Bengals are at Tennessee for a meeting with the 4-3 Titans, who are better than a lot of us thought they would be.
Yeah, the Titans have really surprised me. Mike Munchak, the rookie head coach, more of an organizational guy, certainly plenty of years' experience as an assistant, but wasn't at the top of a lot of lists other than the Titans as the next good head coach in the NFL. He's done a great job when you realize he's doing it without Chris Johnson. Chris Johnson, some people don't even want starting anymore. That's how bad it's got. Javon Ringer has been just as productive. And then I look at the Cincinnati Bengals, Wayne, my hat's off to them. They do get their leading running back, Cedric Benson, back from his one-game suspension. But the bottom line is wins over Cleveland, over Buffalo. That was a good one on October 2nd. Then Jacksonville, Indianapolis, and Seattle. They've lost to Denver, and they lost at home to San Francisco. They haven't played anybody, and this will be a tough test for them. But still, the schedule isn't all that difficult the rest of the way out. Bengals, if they win games like this, they're going to be in the playoffs.
All right, Hubba. An important midseason game in the NFC South is coming up. It has the 4-3 Tampa Bay Buccaneers off a bye week, taking on the 5-3 New Orleans Saints. Gus Kattengell has the story.
The Saints are coming off of a shocking 31-21 loss at St. Louis. The Bucs off of a bye. Prior to that, a 24-18 loss in London to the Bears. Now back on October 16th, Tampa Bay beat New Orleans 26-20 in a game that is still fresh in Sean Payton's mind.
The turnovers stand out, really. There were four of them. If you study closely and you look at this series, you know, that statistic has been vitally important in this game, and it has been for the winner of the Tampa Saints game.
Also fresh in the Saints' mind, the loss last week. You see, losses like that throw doubt on the team's single goal this season, winning another Super Bowl. Quarterback Drew Brees believes the team has some growing up to do.
We got to win games like the one last week. We have to be able to put together good performances consistently and show that we can win in a lot of different ways, that we can, you know, win when, hey, maybe we just don't have our best stuff for whatever reason. We can win when maybe we're a little bit banged up. You know, we can win with offense. We can win with defense. We can win with special teams. As you look at this season, though, and this moment and this opportunity, you know, what kind of team are we going to be this year? Because I feel like we have all the pieces in place. And when we do play well, we play extremely well. We just need that to be on a more consistent basis.
Saints linebacker Jonathan Vilma tells us there is only one way to turn Hudat's frowns upside down.
You know, you get those things fixed with the W. You want to win the game first, then worry about corrections.
The Saints with a crucial next 2 weeks. The Falcons await just before the team's bye next week. As for Sunday's game, Drew Brees plays the part of Captain Obvious.
This game couldn't get any bigger, you know, for being a midseason game where, hey, we're coming off a loss, they're coming off a loss, divisional game, the second one against this team. Yeah, it's a big game.
Gus Kattengell for Pro Football Weekly.
Yes, it's a big game, and if Jonathan Vilma isn't healthy, and if Greg Williams doesn't figure out his schemes on defense, and the Saints cannot put some pressure on this ball club, they could be in trouble. It is a must-win for them. Tampa obviously would love to have it, but it's the Saints who are on the chopping block right now, Wayne.
All right, Hub, another important game in the AFC East as the 5-2 Buffalo Bills meet the 4-3 New York Jets. Bart Pisterna has the story.
Unaccustomed as they have been in recent years to their present position, technically atop the AFC East, the Bills are pulling out all the stops in terms of pomp and circumstance for their home contest with the game behind New York Jets. They'll wear their white jerseys in Buffalo for the first time in quarter of a century. They'll give a Distinguished Service Award to former kicker Scott Norwood. They'll honor the memory of late great Bills center Kent Hull, and they'll recognize area members of the U.S. military. Oh, there'll also be a game, one that'll feature Buffalo's aggressive D, that's given up its share of yardage on the ground, against the Jets' resurgent rushing game. Coach Rex Ryan explains the Jets' successful but recent return to the runway.
I think it starts with running the football. You know, that might be one way. But then getting back to more two backs, two tight end stuff, you know, different things that we've always done in the past.
In the present, the Bills also find themselves with a nifty running game led by back Fred Jackson, who's having an MVP-type campaign for Coach Chan Gailey.
I've not had one that does the all-around stuff that he does. He is extremely good at receiving, running, and protection. You don't find guys that are very good at all three of those.
And just part of the ingredients of the competitive crockpot of this meaty matchup between AFC East contenders. Hey, Ryan Fitzpatrick?
Dude, there's more meeting going into this one than, you know, our eighth game last year when we were 0-7. I mean, that's for sure. I think any time you play a division opponent, it's meaty. It's serious. I mean, this is the games that you have to win to get to the playoffs.
The Harvard guy knows the score. Think he remembers how his team was referred to in the past by the Jets' Bart Scott?
They're Linky and the brain.
Oh, for Pro Football Weekly, I'm Bart Pastrna.
Thank you very much, Bart. Stay tuned. We've got more big games coming up on Pro Football Weekly.
You are listening to Pro Football Weekly, along with the publisher and editor, Hub Arkish. I'm Wayne Larrivee, and we resume our preview of the top games in the NFL this weekend. Two, well, Hub, you could call them rejuvenated teams, collide on Monday Night Football as the Chicago Bears, winners of two in a row, take on the Philadelphia Eagles, coming off a huge win over the Dallas Cowboys a week ago.
You know, Wayne, the interesting thing about this game is at the halfway point, with all the uncertainty, particularly in the NFC, forget the records, it's possible that these are the second and third best teams in the NFC. And what's interesting to me about the Eagles, I was on the sidelines for Westwood One in that Cowboys game. That was a different football team. They played well before the bye and beating the Redskins, but the way they played against the Cowboys last Sunday night, I think they could play with the Packers or anybody else. It was really impressive. Now, the one thing, DeMarco Murray, the kid who had the big game the week before for the Cowboys, did pop off a couple long runs, 8 for 70-plus yards. Can they take away Matt Forte in the running game? Because they got three Pro Bowl corners who are going to shut down the Bears, you know, poor wide receivers. That's the key matchup. Can they just slow Matt Forte? If they can, the Bears are in trouble.
The undefeated Green Bay Packers return to the National Football League wars as they travel to San Diego, where the disappointing Chargers await. We get the story from Greg Matzik.
The Green Bay Packers and San Diego Chargers enter Sunday afternoon's matchup heading in entirely different directions. The electrifying Packers are loose, well-rested, and coming off a bye week and cruising along in the NFC North with a 7-0 record. Meanwhile, the talented but troubled Chargers are looking to rebound after back-to-back narrow road losses to the Jets and Chiefs. Quarterback Philip Rivers has been uncharacteristically inaccurate, having thrown 11 picks this season while generating a quarterback rating of just over 80. Some have questioned if Rivers is 100% healthy.
I wish I had something to blame some of it on, but I don't. I some throws have gotten away from me and, made some poor decisions, but, I'm healthy.
Rivers also expressed an eagerness to return to the home field, a place the Chargers haven't played in over a month.
It'll be nice to get back home, and, obviously, it's exciting anytime you're playing them. Undefeated team at home that won the whole thing last year.
Meanwhile, the Packers under head coach Mike McCarthy have never lost to an AFC West opponent and are 5-0 all-time in San Diego. Couple that with the fact Aaron Rodgers is playing at an MVP level, you can understand why the Packers' confidence is flying high. Regardless of the widespread thinking that Rodgers is the best in the business, he'll never allow success to eliminate the chip on his shoulder.
The goals I set for myself change, I think, every year a little bit. I try and improve on the previous year and learn from the mistakes I made, but when I got drafted, I chipped my shoulder, and I still got it there. So there's a lot of motivation left in that chip.
Well, that's good, but Rodgers won't exactly have to cover a trio of pass catchers who go 6'4 or taller. Head coach Mike McCarthy knows his secondary will be challenged on Sunday.
We're really focusing on the scheme, the things that they're doing. North Turner does an excellent job and has for a long time in this league. We're really focused on the scheme and how they're being used, particularly Jackson and Gates, because they are unique in their size and their ability on the perimeter. So this will be a big challenge for our defense.
Can the Chargers end their two-game skid? Can the Packers remain the NFL's only unbeaten team? We'll find out Sunday afternoon at Qualcomm Stadium. For Pro Football Weekly, I'm Greg Matzik.
You know, Wayne, there's no question the Packers are the better team here, and there's no doubt in my mind anymore the Chargers are not quite the club they've been the last couple of years. But they still have plenty of talent. They're in a must-win situation. And normally I'd love a team coming off the bye, but in the Packers' case, they're not being challenged much. And so you just have to wonder if a superhuman effort from the Chargers couldn't be that dangerous spot on the schedule for the Packers.
Furthermore, Hub, it hasn't been a given that coming off a bye, a team is going to win the next week. Matter of fact, it's been about break-even this season so far. Meanwhile, the rematch of Super Bowl 42 ensues as the New York Giants take on the New England Patriots. And, Hub, these are two teams. The Giants are going pretty well right now. The Patriots have stumbled a little bit here and there. This should be an interesting matchup in Foxborough.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating football game. Of course, it's the Super Bowl rematch from a few years ago. But much like I said about the Bengals, I think the thing that troubles me about the Giants is the wins. Well, St. Louis, they did win that game at Philadelphia. But other than that, I mean, they got a loss at home to Seattle. They've got a loss at Washington. They've struggled in every one of their wins. They played down to the competition. And now here come the New England Patriots. Gotta be smarting after that whooping they took in Pittsburgh last week. Now, the one thing that was unusual last week is Tom Brady, for the second time this season, was under pressure all day long. Nobody rushes the passer better than the New York Giants. And so I think that's the story of this football game. If they can give Tom Brady time to get that offense in rhythm, I think the Giants are in trouble. If the Giants can keep constant pressure on Brady all day long, then we may see that this Patriot team is a little more flawed than we thought they were.
All right, Hub, stay tuned. We've got the headliner coming up next on Pro Football Weekly. The Headliner is an in-depth preview of the top attraction on this weekend's NFL card. It's a rematch of an opening weekend blowout, the Ravens and Steelers, this time in Pittsburgh in a battle for first in the AFC North. Jim Colony has more.
All you need to know about the Pittsburgh-Baltimore rivalry is to listen to how Ravens linebacker Terrell Suggs opened his conference call with the Pittsburgh media this week.
Normally, you know, Ravens still gets everybody's f***ing hot, so... We know what this game's about. We know what this is. So, fuck it. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. And Suggs and the Ravens certainly did it to the Steelers in the season opener in Baltimore to the tune of 35-7. Nose tackle Casey Hampton of the Steelers can't have that again.
I can't see that happening again. If they beat us, they gonna beat us. But it's not gonna be an out tempo thing where they playing faster and with more intensity. I guarantee you that.
But Steelers linebacker Larry Foote says even a close loss would hurt just as much, since the Steelers would no longer be able to block Baltimore's path to the AFC North title.
We don't want to be in that position, hoping that those guys lose for us to win the division. So we want to take care of our business and go a game up on them.
Yeah, that would give Baltimore a one-game lead in the loss column. Big thing in that Baltimore game, 7 Pittsburgh turnovers. Quarterback Ben Roethlisberger was personally responsible for 5 of them.
Each one, you know, whether I didn't see him or he just made a play, but you have to be aware and you can't turn the ball over and a lot of those go on me, so I have to be better with it.
Roethlisberger has been better lately, coming off back-to-back 360-yard games passing. He's thrown for 11 touchdowns in his last 4 games. That's tops in the NFL over that span. Baltimore captain Ray Lewis is expecting that Roethlisberger to show up this week.
Most quarterbacks, when you do take away that first option, you pretty much get them in trouble. And the first game, we was able to really, you know, confuse Ben, take away his first and second option. But as always with him, man, he's one of the greatest warriors the way he plays the game.
Now, what the Ravens may not see a lot of are Pittsburgh's linebackers. James Ferrier almost certainly out. Lamar Woodley is nursing a hamstring. James Harrison's iffy, coming off a broken orbital bone. Ravens running back Ray Rice says may not matter.
Ferrier didn't play last week, and they played against the New England Patriots. You know, Woodley got the hamstring, and Harrison didn't play. It didn't change their approach when they played New England, so I don't think their approach will change anything when they play us. You know, they're going to still be a physical defense.
And Rice ran for 101 yards in the opener, but the Steelers did finally figure out a way to shut down nemesis Tom Brady and the Patriots, and Pittsburgh now has the second-ranked defense in the NFL. Baltimore's number one. In Pittsburgh, I'm Jim Colony for Pro Football Weekly.
You know, Wayne, you would think after almost 8 years in the league, Terrell Suggs would know the same 5 or 6 words you can't use on TV and radio, you don't use on a conference call. I don't know if that's just being a punk or if it's just as getting excited. But the bottom line of this football game is we do get that these teams don't like each other. And the big story of this game, you cannot get around it, is it looks almost certain the Pittsburgh Steelers will be without James Harrison, without Lamar Woodley, and without James Ferrier. You know, and as good and deep as they are at linebacker, I don't know how they overcome that against a team that is pretty much equal with them.
Good points. And the Ravens and Steelers, the headliner this weekend, should be interesting from Heinz Field in Pittsburgh. Time for the Handicapper's Corner featuring from the Phoenician in Las Vegas, our handicapper, Chuck Esposito.
Hey, Chuck, great to have you alongside again this week. And I got to, you know, I've been watching this the last couple of weeks. The number of big numbers at this point in the season, Dallas and Seattle 11.5 and Houston and Cleveland 11, and then games involving good teams. I mean, the Eagles 8 over Chicago, New England 8.5 over the Giants, New Orleans 8 over Tampa. What is going on with these big numbers?
Favorites have been doing very well against the number hub. They stumbled a little bit last week, but overall there's a lot of teams that are the haves and a lot of have-nots. And the betting public historically likes favorites, and they like the teams that are playing good against teams that aren't so good. And that's the case with Seattle and Dallas.
You know, Chuck, I know your job is just to get the number right, and yet there's been a lot of conversation the last couple of weeks of this is kind of on the low end of the spectrum, some of the weakest NFL teams we've seen in a long time, and a lot of people allocating that to the loss of the preseason and training camp. How much more difficult does it make it to get effective numbers?
It is, especially at the midway point of the season when you have so many teams that the public likes to bet against. You hate to inflate the numbers too much, but they're backing the favorites early on, and it does make our job a little bit more difficult because we may think the number should be a little bit lower, but we know which way the public's going to bet it.
You know, Chuck, I understand Saints 8 over Tampa at home. I understand New England 8.5 over the Giants at home. But I was on the sidelines for the national broadcast of that Eagles-Cowboys game. Yes, the Eagles were very impressive, but given the Bears 8 points, that seems like such a big number to me.
There's still a lot of non-believers. I mean, you look at the Bears against the better teams that they've played this year, and those are the teams that they've struggled with. New Orleans, Green Bay, Detroit, those are the teams that beat them. They lost two of those games on the road, and here they are in Philadelphia against a team that just looks so impressive on prime time, and that's the reason that number is a little bit high up.
Chuck Esposito, our handicapper from the Phoenician in Las Vegas. Stay tuned. Publisher's Pen is next. The Publisher's Pen with the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkush. Hub?
You know, Wayne, I've alluded to it a couple times in the show already, but one of the things that is shaping up as the strangest part of the NFL 2011 regular season is the number of really bad football teams. I mean, Miami at 0-7 and Indianapolis at 0-8, even Jacksonville at 2-6, Denver at 2-5. You look at Minnesota at 2-6, Carolina 2-6, Seattle 2-5, the 1-6 Cardinals, and of course the St. Louis Rams. You know, is this the aftermath of a lost preseason, of not enough training camp, of players not being prepared? As I just discussed with Chuck, it's what a lot of the, quote, experts are chalking it up to. But here's the other thing to consider. Is it that there's just not enough talent to go around anymore? Most of these teams have quarterback problems. A lot of them have that stud on defense that they're missing. And when we talk about the possibility of expansion to Los Angeles and London and other places, you really have to scratch your head and say, is that something the NFL could afford to do any time in the foreseeable future?
Thanks, Hub. That'll do it for Pro Football Weekly this week. Special thanks to the Lions, Eagles, and Bengals radio networks. The coordinating producer and engineer of Pro Football Weekly is Randy Meyer. Pro Football Weekly originates from the studios of Syndication Networks in Chicago, Illinois. For Hub Arkush and the Pro Football Weekly staff, this is Wayne Larrabee. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on Pro Football Weekly.